This is 89.1 WEMU, and welcome to this week's edition of Issues of the Environment. While we consider a great many of the inequities and injustices as part of the plan to deconstruct systemic racism, environmental justice cannot be left out of the equation. I'm David Fair, and there's a new study out of the University of Michigan that reinforces how different our environmental conditions can be based on where you live. We're going to talk about the science of this study today. Our guest this morning is Dr. Benjamin Goldstein. He's a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Michigan's School for Environment and Sustainability and lead author of the study called The Carbon Footprint of Household Energy Use in the United States. Thank you so much for the time today, Dr. Goldstein.
Happy to be here.
This is the first nationwide study to find the correlations between affluence, residential floor space, and greenhouse gas emissions. What led you to this particular niche in the exploration of our carbon footprint?
Well, it was actually sort of a side project that came out of another project, which was looking at the environmental impacts of meat consumption, because those impacts are actually becoming more prevalent, and I think people are becoming more and more aware that meat consumption is a big driver of climate change and land use change and water use. And so we were looking for something to compare meat consumption against. And we had another researcher in the office that had access to this fantastic database that had all of the homes in the United States. And we thought maybe we could crunch some numbers to see what the energy use for households in the U.S.
Well, it wasn't ambitious at all, was it?
No, not at all. It was mission creep in the classic sense that we thought, okay, we have these data, we can quickly crunch the numbers, and we'll have something to compare our main results, which are the meat consumption results, against. But then it turned into its own beast.
And I assume that as you started to crunch the numbers, that one of the working hypotheses might have been the bigger the house, the more energy expended. Is that fair for kind of a remedial start to the conversation?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's intuitive. You know, bigger home, more energy use, and then, of course, you're going to have more carbon emissions related to that.
I mentioned it was a nationwide study, and as you mentioned, you looked at 93 million different American homes. How did you break down what constitutes wealthy and what qualifies as low income?
We used a metric that's developed by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. They are the ones who actually define what a low income and a high income household is. And they define sort of the federal poverty thresholds, and we just use those. And so those change they vary across the country. And so we just looked at different neighborhoods, what the average income was in those neighborhoods, and what the average household size in those neighborhoods were. And then you can see if that neighborhood has an average household that falls above or below the poverty thresholds.
This is 89.1 WEMU, and our Issues of the Environment conversation on household energy use in America continues with Dr. Benjamin Goldstein. Based on the delineations made, what is the difference in what wealthy homes generate in greenhouse gases as compared to in the lower income areas?
Yeah, I think I was surprised. I thought it would be actually larger, but it's about 25%.
You thought it would be bigger than that?
Yeah, I thought it would be bigger, to be honest. But, I mean, there's so many different factors at play. So, I mean, household size in terms of square footage is only one factor. I thought it would be bigger. 25% is what we ended up coming out with as the results, but this can be actually much higher depending on the characteristics of neighborhoods in a city. So if you have, for instance, in Los Angeles, you could compare Beverly Hills to South Central LA, and you can see that these differences are actually a factor 15 in that case.
So there are differences not only between where the neighborhood is located, but kind of the genre of neighborhood it's located in, urban, suburban, and rural?
Yes, yes. And where it's located matters. Also, the carbon intensity of the electrical grid matters. So a large home is not in and of itself a high carbon home. You can have a really large home that you throw solar panels all over. It could be low carbon, but if it is supplied by a standard electrical grid, which is using fossil fuels, then that's just going to exacerbate the climate. These all play into it.
So as we look at the different sized homes in the different areas of where we choose to live as Americans, what does it tell us about the manner in which, to this point, we've chosen to construct our communities?
Well, I think there's been a tendency to build larger single-family households. There was really a coordinated push after World War II to make this the dominant built form. Before World War II, there was much more of a tendency to live in cities. And also, I mean, there was a dichotomy, a much more let's say, starker urban-rural dichotomy, where there was either you were living in cities or you were living out in the country. But after World War II, there was a big push to sort of keep people close to cities to support manufacturing and economic growth, but to give them more space, and this is how you led up to this. There's been a huge proliferation of the suburban built form since World War II, and now more than 50% of Americans live in what would be considered suburbs.
Issues of the Environment continues on 89.1 WEMU with Dr. Benjamin Goldstein from the University of Michigan School for Environment and Sustainability. There's certainly almost unanimity in the scientific community. We're in a climate crisis. However, the current administration has withdrawn the U.S. from the Paris Climate Accord. That accord has some pretty stringent standards in it, and that includes a 28% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions in the residential sector by the year 2025, and then an expanded 80% reduction by 2050. Based on your research, the way we have and continue to build our residential communities, is there any chance either goal gets met?
Yeah, certainly. There is certainly always a chance that it could get met. I think the 2030 goal seems like the residential sector is relatively on target for, given decarbonization trends in the electrical grid. So just by making electricity cleaner, this is going a long way towards meeting that 2030 goal. I mean, the real challenge will be the 2050 goal, which, as you said, stipulates 80% reductions. And that will require coordinated action across sectors and scales. So not just decarbonizing our electricity, but individual home retrofits, as well as the deployment of low-carbon energy technologies at the community scale, like cogeneration plants and also solar. And this could also be helped by behavioral changes in how we build new homes, you know, preferences regarding home size and the types of homes we build. So more apartments, smaller floor size, that could also contribute positively towards meeting this goal. So I think it's possible, but I mean, it's an uphill battle given the current administration and also tendencies for home choices.
That is the science of the matter, and that's your wheelhouse. But if I ask you to step into the realm of speculation, do you see that political and societal will to enact the changes necessary to ensure more dense communities with those smaller homes that would create the necessary change?
I think so. I think if people could understand that, you know, when the conclusions of our study is that we don't need seismic shifts in how we build homes in order to reach the Paris goal. You don't need everyone living in Manhattan, for instance. We found that homes in Los Angeles, which are predominantly single-family homes, could still be low-carbon homes and still be a vibrant, also inner-city community that isn't necessarily something that we imagine from like Hong Kong, Tokyo, or Boston, or Chicago or New York. So I think that there's a way to get people to see that they can still live low carbon without having to necessarily sacrifice maybe what's become the norm in American society, which is sort of single family homes.
So you had mentioned that this whole project started because you wanted something to compare to the greenhouse gas emissions caused by animals and the manner in which we produce our animal-based foods. Have you made that comparison yet?
No, I mean, roughly we have, and the comparison basically shows that our food, related impacts are within the same scale of our home energy use impacts, depending on where you live. Of course, if you live in Beverly Hills, and you have a vegan diet, of course, your energy emissions are going to be much higher than your food-related emissions. But the goal was to sort of show that, I mean, energy is going to be higher, and it has a larger impact on has a larger proportion of the carbon footprint of a household or an individual. But food is also pretty high up there. It ranks normally number 3 or number 2 in terms of a driver of emissions.
Significant.
Yeah, exactly. So it is significant. I mean, I would say I would qualify that it's smaller, but still significant and important. So it's going to require changes to how we produce and consume across different categories.
Now, is your job done, or with this research project in the books, will you and your team utilize it in future research that could lead to those policy and regulatory changes and kind of make that accessible and impose its will on those who make the decisions?
Yeah, I hope that it makes a splash and gets people to rethink, you know, how we live and what we need to do to be sustainable in the long term. And I don't think the job's done by any means. We've been promoting this article like crazy, but also on top of that, we've been getting emails and offers from people who are much more involved in the everyday decision-making. For instance, there's someone out of the Bay Area who has a really awesome website. I cannot remember its name. I'd love to plug it. That allows you to enter some basic information about where you live and, you know, what you spend your money on, and it will spit out a carbon footprint and provides very realistic interventions for you to reduce your carbon emissions, for instance. And they want to incorporate our model into their website to help make it more accurate. So in that sense, I think it will have sort of, it will live on after this paper. And we're also looking at other ways, you know, to explore and get grant money and keep this work going and hopefully do something a little bit more practical, not just, you know, publishing, but maybe a tool that will allow people to figure out how they can make better decisions regarding their home energy use.
Well, I will most certainly be looking forward to accessing that tool. Thank you very much for your time today and sharing your research.
No problem.
That is Dr. Benjamin Goldstein. He is a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Michigan School for Environment and Sustainability and lead author of the study, The Carbon Footprint of Household Energy Use in the United States. You can find out more information and gain access to all the links you need to further explore the study by visiting our website at WEMU.org. Issues of the Environment is produced in partnership with the Office of the Washtenaw County Water Resources Commissioner and is heard every Wednesday. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU-FM and HD1 Ypsilanti, celebrating 55 years of broadcasting to Washtenaw County and beyond.